Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It is the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this morning. We get an update on what's going on. Beth Parnitze is here. Mary O'Neill here from the Park Service. Good morning. Good to have you both here this morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having us back.
Good morning.
I feel like I spent more of May with you than my family at times. There were these long stretches where there were events. All of the, I thought the attendance was good. I thought there were really smart people in the audience at a lot of these talks, and nicely done as far as the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse and Wilderness. And it was a good month, I thought.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for spending so much time with us also. And next time, bring your family. But
an idea, yeah.
I think we had a great month of May. You know, we've been pretty darn busy this spring. And between the 160th of Wilderness in Spotsylvania, you know, having kind of follow-up programs on May 12th and May 18th, and then, you know, our annual Luminary Memorial Day ceremony, you know, we might have spent more time with the public than our families in May.
I think we may have, but it was great. The programs were all, they've pretty well attended. I mean, the Luminary especially, just such a meaningful evening, getting so much of the community out to the battlefield and to the cemeteries.
Perfect weather that night, and I thought all the people who were doing programs around the cemetery were really on, and it was just interesting. And a lot of people always gather around a lot of those programs, but I thought even more so this time, if people were there and kind of in between taps every half hour, were trying to pick up some information.
Yeah, you know, we had close to 4,000 people this year for Luminary, and I think, you know, we had people, Mary and I were at the gate, so we got to see almost everybody coming in and seeing people from what appears to be all walks of life, all ages, all different kinds of backgrounds. And I think part of what is so meaningful or connective about our national cemetery is that is also reflective of who's buried there. You know, we have people of all ages, backgrounds, veterans of various wars. I mean, of course, the majority being those killed in the Civil War. But there are so many stories in the cemetery that can be meaningful to almost anybody, I think. And, you know, what a perfect way to commemorate Memorial Day than to actually take a walk through such a large national cemetery and to learn a little more about who's buried there and find how those stories are meaningful to you.
It gets you every time too, and as you walk around that cemetery, and you come to the places where there's just a marker that will have a number, you know, 3 or 7 or 5, and knowing that those are unknowns and those are bodies there, and that makes that cemetery just so special, and that's what makes the Luminary so powerful.
Oh yeah, I mean, we have about 80% of the soldiers in the cemetery are unknown, and I think it's, you know, it just adds that extra layer that, you know, not only did these people sacrifice their lives for, you know, the country as we know it today and for, you know, union and emancipation, but that they also lost their identities. You know, they sacrificed, in some cases, their families knowing exactly what happened to them, knowing where they might be buried. Even today, we have people who come in who know that their ancestors were killed on our battlefields, but, you know, we can only say that they're most likely buried in an unknown grave in the National Cemetery. And to think about, you know, the scale of sacrifice just being increased for those individuals, and to think of the ways that we can continue to pay respects and honor to them, you know, today. I feel like Memorial Day is the perfect time. The Luminary, with all of its, you know, candles to represent the fallen, It almost mirrors back that sort of unknown aspect. Like, we can't, even when we know their names, we can never know these people anymore. And the light, I think, kind of reflects that for us.
And in so many cases, we're never going to know. And for some of these people, but I guess what makes every day different for those of you with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, occasionally people will come in and have a diary or something of someone who died there or who you know in the cemetery, and that always will shed a little bit of light on somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that happened just last week. I mean, we had a woman come in who had ancestors killed at our battlefields and mentioned having things like letters from them. So even for the folks whose, you know, final resting place is not known for certain, right, there's still ways that we can carry those stories forward. And you know, those materials provide a really great connection to their lives and to their thoughts and to their words. And even going through the cemetery outside of the luminary, that was something that kind of I was surprised about. I think the most common question we got at the gates was, is the cemetery open on other days? It would be multiple times in the evening, and it was kind of, you know, to us who we're here every day, it kind of took me aback. But then I was like, oh yeah, you know, people can't see the top of the cemetery, right? Even if you drive past that hill every day, you don't necessarily know what's at the top. So I think being able to kind of share with people not just today, but if, you know, if being surrounded by lots of people is too much, right, come back another day and just experience the space all the time.
Isn't that interesting, though, that we just take things for granted? Everybody knows you can walk up, but if you aren't from around here, or even if you are and don't pay that much attention other parts of the year, you don't know that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I'll do a quick plug that this summer we have many days we'll have a little pop-up station in the National Cemetery that is sharing some of the stories, including some of the ones that we've shared at Luminaries past. So if you want to come in at a quieter time and during the day this summer, you can come up and we'll have somebody up there who's sharing those stories. You can find, you know, some of the graves of the people they're talking about and have another experience yourself in the cemetery.
It's so interesting, though, that when, like you mentioned, Mary, when someone comes in with a diary, even though you all have read most of the things that are available, to get something new is another perspective.
Oh, it's fantastic. And I also, I mean, I love, you know, I love when people come in with things like that. And then we have our summer staff on now. We have a small army of interns and seasonals. Like one of our seasonals created that pop-up that Beth just mentioned, which is a great resource. Another one of our interns is working with transcribing different kinds of letters. And one of the reasons I love those resources, because some of them are, you know, there are these, you know, soldiers thinking deep thoughts, thinking serious thoughts, thinking about why they're fighting in Union. And some of them are them complaining to their parents about how much money they lost gambling. And it's just like, there's, you know, you see the full spectrum of humanity, of their humanity, which I love, right? There's something great about getting a diary where someone is really contemplating the war and why they're fighting and everything they're going through, next to something that might seem maybe not necessarily trivial, but maybe a little silly, or recounting silly things that happen.
They're just like us.
And they're just like us, right? People don't process things the same way. People don't process war or trauma or everything they're going through so much, right? And they're all, I think, something just in the cemetery especially, you have to remind yourself, like, they're mostly young. They're really, really young who are in there.
Yeah. That's the thing when you go, especially if you go to Chancellorsville and look at that room with all the wall with the walls with a lot of the people who've died in this area, that you look at them and you just think, look how young they are.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it can be really striking. I mean, to think about. And, you know, it's funny because having worked at the park for a long time, I remember being about the same age as a lot of those soldiers and thinking, like, I know it's young, but it's not that young. And now that I've been here for a little longer, I look back, no, they're children.
Yeah, it is. Need to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk. It's the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park in this morning. Beth Parnitza and Mary O'Neill. History at Sunset is ready to kick off, and we'll talk about that when we return on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
It is the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this morning. Mary O'Neill and Beth Parnitza in this morning from the Park Service to talk about what's going on. History at Sunset is one of my all-time favorites. It used to be a Friday night program that I would spend Friday nights with. It's now a Saturday night program, but just a great chance to walk around and talk about subjects. And I guess, Beth, you can run through how you decide on topics, because, I mean, there is a lot of information, and I've always thought, and usually it's occasionally you'll get split up and there'll be a couple of different. You'll split up, but generally it's one historian. It's a lot of information.
Yeah, no, it truly is. You know, we basically we get together and we just kind of talk about it. We throw out ideas for, you know, what we think might be, you know, is there anything extra relevant this year? You know, like we chose the May 18th History at Sunset talk because we wanted to mark that the Spotsylvania campaign is not one day or one weekend, but in fact 2 weeks. But we didn't have the staff capacity to do an event every weekend, a major event every weekend in May.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, we're looking like, hey, you know, this was a really great program that I gave a couple of years ago, but the weather was bad and only 50 people could show up, but we think it would draw more, so then we throw in some programs we've done before, because also we know that, you know, sometimes we give one program once and in that program we realize how we really wanted to do the program and it isn't the way we just did it. So it gives us a chance to kind of recycle, share the material with more people and do a redo, which is often better than the first time. And yeah, so we'll just kind of toss around ideas and then we try to spread out our topics. So a lot of times we'll try to do some that are more focused on kind of social history, some that are a little more focused on military, although you'll see us always mixing those topics and integrating things. We try to spread it out so that geographically we have something on each of the battlefields, or at least speaking to each of those battlefield stories. Sometimes, you know, we typically have somewhere between 6 to 8 to 10. So sometimes we do repeats, not like of the same program, but of hitting the same battlefield or sort of general subject again. But yeah, our goal for History at Sunset is always either to share kind of a deep dive into something that we think we know or that we talk about a lot, or to share some sort of new angle or new story that we don't typically get a chance to talk about in our normal summer programming. So these are all meant to be, you know, they're 90-minute programs, so they are kind of a deep dive. They're a bit of a commitment. But yeah, I'd say we just have some good conversation. We talk about what's relevant, talk about what we think people would be interested in, and then we go from there.
I've always thought that a History at Sunset book would be just, I would be first in the line to get it. Because they really are great stories. And sometimes I know, like over at Chancellorsville, one time with Frank, we went like deep into the woods. And I can remember one with you, and I can't remember if it was about signs. It was something at Chancellorsville, and I remember it was about signs and not just the wording on signs. I forget. But there are a lot of times little things that come up in these programs where people will ask questions. And the other thing is, because it's the summer, if you go to many of these programs, thunderstorms a lot of times will cut a program short. Just when it gets going, you start hearing thunder and you just keep thinking, I'll keep thinking, please don't hear that. Let's just keep going. But there's always someone else who's listening and will say we got to cut this short. But it's a great summer program to really dive into sometimes really specific history, or a lot of times going places that often aren't open to the public.
Yeah, you know, and I'd say that our team puts in so much good work. You know, a lot of research goes into these programs. Again, since it's not a topic that we typically do every day, you know, it's something that means digging more into some of those diaries and letters that we have, you know, in our park's collections. And yeah, a book would be amazing. But it's a lot of work.
Yes, as usual. Yes, there's not enough people to do all of that. Every time I drive by the Isaac Walton League in Spotsylvania, I think there was a program there that I didn't know that there was so much. There was so much Civil War activity there, and again, it's those kinds of programs. You just walk away and think, I had no idea. I drive by this every day.
Yeah, no, I think we could start small. Maybe an article about each one. Or maybe like a podcast on each one.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Which is something that we're always thinking about, right? When we do these kinds of research and these kinds of programs, how do we share those with as many people as possible? I mean, thinking of this year, things that you know a lot of people don't know about. We have a program at like the Wilderness Crossing Trail, which a lot of people don't even know about that trail. So meeting at Elwood and then hiking that trail and talking about what happened there. We'll have a program at the Second Battle of Fredericksburg, which is, you know, you're not actually going anywhere that's unusual, right? It's a lot of the Fredericksburg battlefield. It's the same location, right? But talking about something that we don't often interpret at that space, but something that's really important there.
I was just going to say, the Second Battle of Fredericksburg, you just don't, it's the December one you talk mm-hmm. about. The Second Battle, nobody knows much about.
I think we've always been afraid that we would confuse people if we started talking about First Fredericksburg and Second Fredericksburg.
Yeah.
In part because most people haven't heard of Second Fredericksburg the way that they've heard of First Manassas and Second Manassas sometimes. But, you know, so it's not something we get the chance to talk about as much, or we talk about it kind of in generalities at Chancellorsville because, you know, it's influencing that campaign. But yeah, and that's our next History at Sunset. So coming up this Saturday, if you want to know more about the Second Battle of Fredericksburg, join us at 6:30.
The Second Battle of Fredericksburg, was that in May?
It's in May, 1863. So yeah. It's really... I mean, it's part of the Chancellorsville campaign. So part of Hooker's plan is to leave troops in Fredericksburg as he's moving the rest of the U.S. Army around behind Lee. And that's how the rest of the U.S. Army, the bulk of the U.S. Army, ends up at Chancellorsville. He has a small force under Sedgwick that remains in Fredericksburg. And they end up crossing over the river, engaging with Confederates at many of the same locations that they had been fighting in December. And breaks through Murray's Heights, right? Takes Murray's Heights and starts heading towards Chancellorsville. And then they get halted at Salem Church. So that's the Second Battle of Fredericksburg as part of the Chancellorsville campaign.
And in the second Battle of Fredericksburg, the Union wins. But because, like you say, the larger Battle of Chancellorsville is now what we're focusing on.
Yeah, it's sort of like the larger. I mean, the campaign. The U.S. Army ultimately retreats back across the river, so it's not the success that Hooker would have liked, but also not the success that Lee really wanted, because Lee was hoping when he surrounded those troops at Salem Church that he would be able to like capture a whole corps, and he doesn't do that either. So it's kind of a no one gets what they want sort of battle.
Well, you mentioned, Mary, about Wilderness, and to me Wilderness is just fascinating, and there aren't a lot of programs out there. There's a lot out there, but I guess part of it is because it is farther to go to get there, but. For someone that's out exploring, there's a lot to see. There's a lot of places you can see that are part of the Battle of Wilderness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so we'll be talking about, for this next one, which is going to be kind of later June, June 29th, is going to be a walk around what we call the Wilderness Crossing Trail, which starts at Elwood and walks up to Wilderness Tavern. And it talks a lot, because that whole area is sort of the background of the Union Army, so that trail walks you through like what's happening to keep this army moving. You know, we talk a lot when we talk about armies, we talk about the action they see in the field or even what it's like to live in camp. But we don't often talk about the logistics to keep the army moving And truly, that is what wins a war, right? Is if you can keep your people supplied, if you can keep them on the move, if you have the networks to maneuver the way that you want to. And so we'll kind of talk about what it means to be near an army headquarters, what it means to be, you know, again, all the supplies that are taking place, but also a little bit about the wilderness as an area before the army comes. And that's when we start talking about Wilderness Tavern, kind of the turnpike itself, the toll roads in the area, what transportation is like in the wilderness and kind of on the sort of edge of civilization at that time. And in some ways, it's not the edge of civilization. It's almost like, it reminds me of, you know, when we talk about going back to my home of West Virginia, we're like, oh yeah, you're really out there. It's like, no, we're not. We're right in between Ohio and Pennsylvania and
right.
Virginia, y'all. Like, we're right in the middle of everything. But it feels like it, right? And so we'll talk about all those sorts of pieces. But then we also have another program at the Wilderness. This year, our very last History at Sunset program is going to be at Elwood and talking about kind of the legacy of enslavement and resistance at Elwood. So looking at Elwood as a plantation that, of course, later is overrun by war. But how is it part of that kind of society that brings about the war and what's happening kind of on the ground there?
The Wilderness Crossing, did you a program? I mean, I can remember back, but didn't you and Eric Mink do a program?
We did. Out there? We've done a couple. Yeah.
The fact that I can remember that shows that
you're a super fan.
I have been. As you're talking about that, about wilderness, because when you first mentioned Wilderness Crossing, I'm thinking, where is that? And then to mention Elwood, I can still picture those long. That's a fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
is a fascinating part because you're going on trails that you don't know exist and can't yeah. really get to.
Well, and it's one of the newer trails in the park. I was actually lucky enough to do like the inaugural trail tour, I think back in 2013, because I also wrote the trail guide for it. And so I opened the trail, and then we did a 150th program out
yeah.
there that was like the, you know, Lee and Grant at war kind of opening up the campaign, which I remember distinctly because Wilderness Run was flooding a lot. And before that program, Eric and I joked that we might have to do like a river. Oh shoot, what is it called? The amusement park ride that's like the Raging Rapids is what it was.
Oh, okay. It was. No, I can remember that because it had been raining.
Oh, like a lazy river float. That's what we were talking yes. about. We're going to do like give everyone inner tubes. We're going to do a lazy river float down Wilderness Run. And then Eric and I did a History at Sunset that was all about Jackson's arm.
I remember that. I was there for that too.
You know, it's amputated near Wilderness Tavern mm-hmm. and then taken, you know, basically similar route from Wilderness Tavern to be buried in the Lacey Family Cemetery. And Eric and I were like, do you think we can do a whole hour and a half program just about Jackson's arm? And then we were like, we can totally
you
do
did.
That.
You did. It was fascinating too.
Well, yeah, because it's not just what happened, but it's also the memory of it and the other, you know, like the Marine Corps operations in the 1920s. The lingering rumor, which I even heard this past weekend again, that Smedley Butler dug it up. And so, yeah, the question of how the arm got there, is the arm even there? Why are we so concerned with Stonewall Jackson's arm and where it's buried and why do we visit an arm? You know, like
it's got
all
a marker
of these
there. Because I thought I need to go back to Elwood one of these days to go, I have not visited the arm. Lately.
I was going to say, surely you've seen it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Visit the arm. And all of the I think it's 19 people who are
right.
in the family cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
There are whole people.
There are people there.
Buried there. Yeah.
So, yeah, great stuff. Great stuff. History at Sunset. Don't miss it again. It's this Saturday is the first one of the, or is this the second one of the season? Is that the mm-hmm.
It's kind of the second one, but it's also kind of the first one. We took a month off in
yeah.
between
yeah.
you know, May 18th and
it yeah. starts at 6:30. This Saturday, it'll be what at the National Cemetery.
So meet at the visitor center, and then they're going to do a walk around that area.
Okay,
second Fredericksburg focused.
Yeah, we'll talk about much more with History at Sunset and some other stuff this morning with Mary O'Neill and Beth Parnitza, Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:32.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
We're talking Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this morning. Always an interesting conversation. Mary O'Neill is here and Beth Parnitza, and History at Sunset, 6:30 this Saturday night. It starts at the Visitor Center downtown for the program this week on the Second Battle of Fredericksburg. You've got the schedule there, Mary, and have touched on a couple of others, so we can continue on with some more of these programs.
Yeah, I've got the schedule right in front of me. So, the next two are going to be Second Fredericksburg and the Wilderness Crossing Trail. On July 13th, we'll have a cemetery program, so cemetery walk, dealing with things like pensions, how the cemeteries were established, the way that advocacy from veterans and veterans' families influence policies around cemeteries, veterans, pensions, a lot of things. That's a program that we did at the Fredericksburg 160th.
I remember that one.
Recycling it, right? But not everyone can get out there in December. It's colder, and so it'll
yeah.
be.
Yeah, and it was fascinating because it's kind of behind the scenes of what you don't think of those kinds of
yeah,
things.
Yeah, and it's we'll have our former supervisory ranger Becca Toy is going to be visiting us for that one again, and right, one of the things that she's done when she starts the program is asking people, like, who thinks that veterans, you know, have a right to be buried in a national cemetery, right? Just kind of addressing these things that we so often take for granted as just being the right way to do things. But they weren't always considered that way. People had to advocate for cemeteries and for veterans' rights to be buried there and for veterans' spouses' rights to be buried there,
yeah.
And for things like pensions. So a lot of that comes up during the Civil War period. So that program should be really great. And then on July 27th, we have a program about Confederate POWs at Spotsylvania Courthouse. So it'll meet at the Bloody Angle. So again, a location that we've done many programs at. We have rangers out at the Bloody Angle doing two programs a day on weekends, but a deep dive into an angle of it that we don't always get to talk about. And that one will also be featuring that one. Maddie's coming back.
Yeah.
Our ranger Maddie, who's a phenomenal ranger currently at Maggie Walker, but she's going to be coming back to us briefly for that one.
Perfect.
But yeah, thinking about, you know, the experience of prisoners of war during the Civil War.
Again, and that's something we hear rarely of, and that's where History at Sunset, like you say, you not only you can go to places, or you talk about topics that you don't often talk about in just the regular programs that you give.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, and that one's, there are some really famous photographs that come out of the prisoners of war there. And it's a key period in the history of the treatment of prisoners during the Civil War, because the paroling and the prisoner exchanges had largely stopped. So now the armies are not just kind of gathering people up and then arranging paroles and arranging exchanges, but they have to figure out how do we manage these people.
Yeah.
So you have kind of on the ground what's happening, and then you have the bigger issues and the bigger policies that go all the way up to Washington. So it's a great way to think about all of those things. And then August 10th will be our last History of Sunset of the season. And that will be about the legacy of Elwood, about slavery and resistance at Elwood, really looking at it as a plantation, before the Civil War breaks out, right? What is life like there? How do people who are enslaved there seek freedom, seek autonomy in their lives? Actually, Maddie, call out to Maddie again, right? Did some great research at Elwood that resulted in some smaller pop-up programs last year that we still have up. So discovering, you know, sources and stories from the archives. We know, for example, things like there's a woman named Anne who's 18 who burned down a barn, who's enslaved at Elwood, burned down a barn, right? So that act of, you know, resistance, you know, destroying the property of the people who own her, right? What does that mean? What are the consequences for her? If you know the consequences, you know, what is the process where someone decides to make that decision?
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about people like Anne, people like there's a man, Anthony Jones, who runs away, establishes a life in New York. And just the dynamics of the plantation and what it all means, right? Really thinking about it. It's really hard history to talk about, but just super important. And I think to talk about, you know, what it means. And there is, I think there's an amount of like inspiration that we can gain from these stories of people, you know, seeking freedom, finding ways to fight for liberty and freedom and those ideals that we hold. So, you know, valuable.
Yeah. I would think with these programs too, that you have the outline of all these different programs and really all the programs you do in general, but over time you hear different stories, you know, people bring things in, and just everyone's growth as a historian and how you study things, you can always change and, you know, add to programs and come up with different, people can come up with different perspectives. Because one of the great things that I always think of the programs that you do, just everyone is so good at being able to talk about the history. But many of these programs at the end, you're able to kind of put it into a context and that changes over time and as people mature.
Yeah, I think that's we talk a lot in our trainings about being relevant, that it's so important for sites to be relevant, right? And what makes history relevant can change, right? That changes with what's going on in the world, with what's going on in people's lives, with, you know, who you're talking to, right? What's relevant to like a group of third graders is not necessarily the same thing that's relevant to maybe us in this room. So it does keep it, I think it helps keep it fresh too, right? Like, you know, I've looked at programs that I've done, you know, even just a few months ago and been like, oh man, I would like to change that. I mean, yeah. I changed my Sunken Road Tour. I literally revised my Sunken Road Tour a month ago and then decided that I wasn't going to use it like last week. And then I picked another version of it.
Yeah.
So like you're constantly, you know, as you learn more, as you, you know, just we're constantly thinking very deeply about the history that the park protects and manages, right? It does keep it, and it keeps it interesting for us, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things about History at Sunset is that we always have at least two people on a program, which means that you don't just get your perspective or your thoughts, but you actually have a partner who's doing some of the same research or you're sharing sources with, and you all can compare, like, oh, hey, this is my take on this, but, you know, oh, someone else is going to pull a different thread of relevance or importance. And, you know, the way that you're able to kind of combine those or work together with them can lead to some really neat insights. And that collaboration piece, I think, is one of those things that definitely makes us better as historians, and it makes our programs better in the end.
Yeah, you always walk away thinking, I've been on dozens of Bloody Angle tours and going to one in last month going to one in May with Frank O'Reilly. At the end, he talked for 15, 20 minutes about what the soldiers on those days, what they dealt with, and, you know, how would we do it. And it's those kinds of things. You walk away with more than just this. That's what makes these programs so interesting. It's those perspectives and hearing from people. It's just more than a battle went here, and then because of that, they went here, and you bring so much more to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's always our goal. Like Mary said, you know, it is what about these stories is relevant? What is speaking to us in 2024 about what these soldiers went through, about the refugees, about enslaved people, and how do we understand ourselves better based on their experiences and our understanding of those experiences.
It is interesting for the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, because now you've gone through anniversaries again with the Battle of Fredericksburg, Chancellorsville, and then Wilderness in Spotsylvania. And so I guess you can kind of get back into, come December, you'll do programs. You always do programs, but when it's not a big number year, you don't do quite as many, and you can kind of strategize and figure what's next.
Yeah, and I think this gives us a really good opportunity now that we have kind of wrapped up our 160th anniversaries to think about, what does come next? What do we do next year? We are looking at, I would say, a lesser capacity than we've had in past years. So that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be rolling out a massive slate of other programs, but it might mean that we can focus more on some internal things. Mary is always a great advocate for, how about the website? What about something that's going to last for a while instead of a one-off program? And I think we, in particular, would like to invest, some of the conversations we've been having is to find ways to invest specifically in our community. Especially looking into some of the historically marginalized communities, can we do more outreach to the African-American community? Can we find folks who are descended from this area, either living on the battlefields, being enslaved at a plantation, working at one of these sites in the 20th century? How can we kind of build more relationships? And so, it might be more background work, but hopefully that's going to be some of the direction that we turn to in the coming years.
Yeah. Well, and we've just even talked. I mean, there are just so many different ways to get the word out, whether it's, podcasts or just even writing short things or overviews of things. So, yeah, there's always something new. And how you present things has changed over the years.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're, I think the National Park Service at large is in the midst of a big change in the way that it looks at its programs. We are, as we've been talking about, we're always looking for that relevance. We're not necessarily, I think in the past, it's been easy to view park rangers as walking encyclopedias. And we still are. Some of us are, at least.
Yes.
But to think like a walking encyclopedia doesn't really help you to think about society, right? And to think about how this history is relevant. And so how can we shift what we're doing to help people to not just walk away saying, wow, that person knows a lot, but to say, oh, I have learned skills or thoughts that I can apply to my own life, and I can take this and move into my own future with it in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. I didn't know.
We spent a lot of time thinking about this, and talking about it, and that is part of what helps our evolution, And so bringing kind of that context and that meaning and importance, which you see a lot in our conclusions, but you'll also see us building up to it in our programs, But yeah, we're looking at what comes next. We're always looking for that.
Yeah. One final break. We'll come back and talk a few other things going on with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. And I should say, I say this all the time, appreciate what we get here with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Parks. There are so many other park service sites around the state that I can think of that don't do nearly put the effort in and do the programs that you do. So I appreciate it, and we all should appreciate it more, because it is everybody there does just such good stuff. Mary O'Neill, Beth Parnitzer here this morning. We'll take a quick break and wrap it up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Beth Parnitzer, Mary O'Neill here this morning from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. The other day, I drove by the National Cemetery, and I saw this group following someone giving a program, and it reminded me that you come in and we talk about these big programs, but there you can go by most days, and there are programs and people to talk to and find out information.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Especially in the summertime, It's our busy season. We expand hours. We have programs at pretty much every site. It's just a matter of checking the schedule and figuring out what you're interested in. And, you know, I know, see that Mary has the schedule up. And if you want to give some highlights of, you know, maybe some of the new programs that we have this year or some of the standard
programs
we have offered.
Super exciting, right? I mean, we have our standard, like, Sunken Road walking tours twice a day. But around that at Fredericksburg, we have those pop-up programs. So what Beth was talking about in the cemetery, or sometimes they might be by the Kirkland Monument, right? These sort of special kind of dives into different aspects of the of history, of the Civil War, of memory. At Chatham, we have a daily tour now called Sparking Freedom, which is, again, about resistance to enslavement and people seeking freedom at Chatham. So things like the slave revolt that happened there in 1805, all the way to there's two individuals who were enslaved at either by the Lacys. We don't know if they lived at Chatham, some of them, but who ended up joining the USCTs and fighting in the Civil War. So some of those stories. We also have at Chatham in the mornings, we have some special programming every day, either an art programming, so kind of a drop-in program where you can come and use the space, right? Use the gardens to be creative, which is historically a use of the space and, you know, kind of embracing the community use of the space. And then children's activities on weekends in the morning at Chatham. We also have a weekly, at Chancellorsville, weekly Reading with a Ranger program on Tuesday mornings. So that's a new thing, right, for people who are home with kids. Come by and do a story craft. It'll be really fun.
Yeah.
And then other new programming, Elwood, we're doing, Wilderness Battlefield at the Brock Road Plank Road intersection. We're doing tours there in the mornings. So that's a location critical to the battle. We don't often do programming in the morning there. And then the last two that I'm going to shout out to is a few days this year, we'll have rangers out at Chatham in the evening. So keeping the gates open till 8 o'clock on a few evenings. And then on the first and third Saturdays, we'll have walking tours of the Jackson Death Site grounds, which is a new program. We don't often do formal programming out there, but a special way to tell the history of the grounds at the Jackson Death Site.
I would like to do that. I haven't been out there in a few. That's such an interesting site, especially when you look back and you see pictures of that were taken shortly after Stonewall Jackson died out there, and you look in so much of that. I mean, that house is just the way it is the way it was. I mean, that really is worth driving out there and seeing that sometime.
Yeah, and another shout out to Maddie. We miss Maddie a lot.
I miss Maddie too. Maddie was a great guest.
She's amazing. Right, but like she did a lot of really neat research, especially around the grounds of the Jackson Death Site, because, you know, obviously for a long time our interpretation and our understandings focused specifically on the office where Jackson died and Jackson's last days and moments. And I think Maddie, you know, we had some general context for that landscape, but Maddie really helped to give us some deeper layers and to then put that into an audio tour, which another shout out, like we have a lot of programs this summer, but between the audio tours that Maddie wrote and the audio tours that Mary helped to kind of compile and worked with the staff to make, you know, we do have also a lot of self-guided options for folks who want to get out and still, you know, learn a lot about the history. But yeah, so the landscape tour at Jackson Death Site is a good kind of scaffold built on the work that Maddie did. So thanks, Maddie.
A lot of good stuff, and all of this. There's the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park Facebook page. Also, the website has all this information, and there is something. You don't have to wait to some of these big programs. You can come to a small program or just show up, and there's people at the visitor centers that can help you, and there are short movies and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's just great to keep in mind that our favorite thing is to talk to people about history. So when you come to the park, like, don't be shy. Ask us about programs. Ask us about, you know, if you had an ancestor who fought here or a special interest that you have in the space.
Yeah.
Like, we're thrilled just to talk to you.
History at Sunset this Saturday. Beth Parnitza, Mary O'Neill with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Thanks. We'll talk soon. See ya.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ted.
That is it. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.